Mike Bisaglia here from SevillePodcast.com. You are about to listen to Runcast, a weekly forum of everything running, with your host, Mark Lorenzoni, a community running expert who has been directing hundreds of area for nonprofit foot races and coaching thousands of runners for the past 30 years.
Hi everyone, Mark Lorenzoni here. Welcome to this week's edition of Runcast. Just a general call out, state of affairs. A lot of good things out there, seeing a lot of good things and having a good feel in the air. We're feeling like we're on the other side of winter in a lot of ways. We had 7 inches of snow total compared to 60 some odd inches last year. I feel really blessed. It was a cold winter, yes, but talking to a woman yesterday, she goes, the 10-miler training program has taught me how to enjoy winter and running in the wintertime, and you can embrace it. It's truly, for me, the only time of year that I really feel super alive when I'm running, when I'm outside, because after about half a mile into it, I'm warmed up. In the summertime, I would say you're marching towards discomfort with each passing mile. In the wintertime, you're heading towards comfort with each passing mile, and as long as you're dressed properly, it isn't too cold or too rainy. Those 36-degree rainy days are the worst ones.
And I found for me the key is wearing gloves. Just keeping your hands warm can do wonders for the rest of your body.
One part of your body, one part can,
it's crazy,
can bring down the whole house. With men, we're embarrassed to talk about it, but, it's our privates, and you say, oh, my God, Mark, what are you talking about? But we have more men that when I talk to them, they say, yeah, I've been embarrassed to talk to someone about it, but there's a windshield.
And yeah.
I personally wear one every time I'm out in the winter, and that part of my body, it's not doing any talking, negative talking to me. So, awkward thing to talk about. But, comfort's a big part of the game. Every other sport has, their clothing, their apparel, their comfort. Look at, you see those guys in the sideline of football games. They got those big aerator fans with water, mist pour. Well, we have to deal with the environment without that kind of technical stuff.
Right.
So we've got to beat it any way we can. Anyway, good time. Feel like spring is right around the corner. Certainly, MJK this Saturday kicks off the spring official. It's always the kind of official start of the spring racing season. We have at least a race, if not two, if not three. And there's one weekend, I'm embarrassed to say, with four races on it, because I hate to see all that competition out there with one another, because so many of these are fundraisers and we are still a small town. But anyway, between now and the middle of June, starting with the Martha Jefferson 8K this Saturday, we're in the thick of it. This is the time of year to really enjoy it and celebrate your training and have fun, but also at the same time, be careful you're not tipping the scale by racing too much. Some neat things, just observations over the weekend. I was out the track and I'm working with the 10-mile training folks, and they're all excited. They're group number one hit 10 miles this week, which is group number one is the people that started at zero last week. So folks like Kate Eagle and Will Hendricks and Audra Long, their first 10 miles ever, very, very cool stuff. And I'm reminded about the perspective of it. Remember the first time I ran an hour, what a big deal that was. I felt so important as a runner, and so like I'd hit this big milestone. I ran uninterrupted, didn't stop and walk 1 hour. And these guys running 10 miles, I always tell them, be careful comparing yourself to other runners,
because
they'll skew that. Oh, yeah, no, I've done a marathon. I've done an ultramarathon. 10 miles, huge deal. I mean, you now have separated yourself from all but about 94% of, you're in the upper 6% of the population as far as your ability, your cardio ability. And this is in the United States, obviously, but it's also sometimes you get a little kind of whacked perspective because we're such a fit community,
right,
which is nice. But
and someone that when I came here, I could run about 2 to 3 miles, and I did that consistently, and I thought to myself, I could never do 10 miles. But when you do go through the training, it's a lot of work and it's hard work, but it's something remarkable because your body can transform and do it. And I was running 5 miles the other day, and I'm like, oh, this is not bad.
Recovery runs 5 miles for you. Not a bad thing to be saying.
No, so, absolutely.
Shorter run. I was at Charlie Hurt and his fiance Allison's engagement party the other night, and I was reminded, I was at his aunt and uncle's house, beautiful home, but looking around the room, all these runners, young and old, and looked over at Charlie and reminded of how big a part running plays in someone's life through their lifetime. And he was a great runner in high school at Western, ran at William & Mary, and now he's in the post-collegiate team and still loving the sport. I was talking to his uncle about it and said, how much, he says, Charlie just absolutely loves the sport, gets so much out of it. And I said, I know, he's always gotten it right. And Charlie's a great balanced guy, assistant coach, basically volunteer out at Western Almar with the his old coach, Lindy Bain, from high school. And I mean, Charlie, just a really special guy from a special family, and just kind of a neat feeling in the air there. A lot of, like I said, a lot of runners from different high schools that are all, there was some Louisa girl there, and there were some Almar people there and Western people there and some Jefferson Force. And there was still, you know, got a common bond from this sport. Remind about the good things of running. Talk about running through the ages. Doug Bloor, he's a coach at Monticello High School, beloved. He's a guidance counselor down at Walton Middle School, and he ran in high school, one of the most competitive runners we've ever seen in this area. And here he is at 40, in his 40s, and still running really well. Won his age group down at Williamsburg last week in the half marathon, and coaching young people, motivating them, getting them involved. His wife, Sheila, a good runner herself, and just seeing Doug, I've known him since he was about 13 years old, and watched him never get out of shape, really, and always been someone I've admired, and now that I see him in his 40s giving back to the sport at such an intimate level, it's neat stuff. Same thing, I was out at the track, and I saw Coach Tillery and Coach Pugh from Western, and Coach Tillery is quote-unquote retired from coaching out there. I said, what are you doing out here? I thought you were retired, because spending some time working with his son who's over at Monticello, great athlete, a TJ, and he says, you know me, Mark, and I got to help the girls out there going to Nationals. And, you know, the camaraderie, him, Kate Pugh, no, like, hey, man, this isn't your turf, back off. It's come help Coach Till. I know you can inspire the girls and help me out. And, you know, great sign of the camaraderie of the sport. Right. You know, a lot of coaches would have their own little turf, but someone recognizes that not their weaknesses, but maybe that someone can make things even stronger.
Exactly.
And I'm really neat to see. And there was a whole pile of Western girls out there blending in with my foot soldiers. Took in the Adjustment Bureau yesterday afternoon with my son, Adrian. He's home for spring break from Tech, and he's my movie buddy. We always take in a movie whenever he's home from break. We saw The Fighter and The King's Speech over Christmas, and this time we saw a running film. A running film? The Adjustment Bureau? Well, Matt Damon spent a good part of the movie, you know, running from the bad, quote-unquote bad guys, but right, actually maybe not so bad as you watch the film, but really enjoyable. And Matt Damon, to me, is a winner. Everything he touches, all those Bourne Identity movies.
Yeah,
have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen the movie you're talking about, but all the Bourne Identities.
For me, it's more of an accessible Inception. I felt like an Inception this summer, that my brother-in-law is a colonel in the Marines, and he turned to me and he goes, the people that got this movie, we're walking out of the film, we'd seen it with our younger kids, and he walks out and whispers to me, he goes, I think this is one of these movies you got to be smoking a lot of dope before you come into the film to figure out what the heck was going on.
You need to see that one at least two or three times.
I saw it when I was tired, and I was like, this is too much thinking, too much. You know,
right. You have to be fully awake and ready to go.
I'm getting off on a tangent here, but anyway, back to running. In the books, what happened over the weekend, very cool. The distance medley relay team from UVA, tremendous job. Really, really, the four girls, they set the school record. It's Morgan Gay, who ran the 1,200, opened with the 3:22, and then Isla Smith with a 54-second 400. Lindsay Harper just continues to, we talk about her almost every week, dropped her 800 time down to 2:05, and then handed off to Stephanie Garcia, who legged out a 4:36 anchor, brings them to a 10:59, which is amazing. It's the number two time in the country right now behind Villanova. It's 10:56. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, they shattered their own record basically from last week, which was 11:14. We opened the season with 11:19 being the school record from 1983. Those are some amazing girls. They were all very national caliber, all Americans, and they just destroyed that record, a 20-second dip here. Congrats to them. Mary Jane Reeves, who's their coach, and one of Jason Vigilante's assistants, a way to go. And they'll be running at the national meet this weekend. Let's see. Well, the Nationals, of course, UVA's heading to that, and Marcus Robinson, the triple jump, he's ranked 13th in NCAA. And Adam Abdulrazzaq is a 60-meter hurdle runner, and he'll be representing the University of Virginia along with the distance medley folks. And then the high schoolers are there finishing, you know, we said state meet last week. This time they're on to Nationals. It's at the Bronx and Armory. The NCAAs, I forgot to mention, they're at College Station, Texas. That starts this Thursday and Friday and Saturday. It runs through. And then high schoolers are Friday and Saturday. Adam Vissiquet from Almore run the 2 mile. The Louisa 4x200 team, of course, with Tony Green at the helm, who's also going to run triple jump, going to do the triple jump and long jump and the 60 hurdles. Fuma's going to be there. Charlottesville High School, David Johnson, the triple jump. Ryan Thomas, the freshman phenom from Almore. Mark Bauckham, Austin McPhillips. There's going to be a pile of folks. And you got the Western girls, the 4x8 is going to be there. Tremendous. Maddie Webb, Killian Connell, Elizabeth Sinclair from Almore. I could go on and on. It's pretty impressive. And then the pole vaulters, Kelsey Grupp from Western, Summer Shepherd from Almore, all at the national meet. Kind of a neat thing to, we're in this running crazy community that excels at this national level. Think about it. The concept of getting in a bus and going to the Bronx to run at the New York City Armory in the national championship, it's just, I wonder sometimes if we're all grasping this, that what a big deal this is. I never got to do something like that. I was from New Jersey. Going to New York would not have been a huge deal, but going somewhere that far away to compete in quote-unquote national championships. And I remind these young kids, you know, enjoy this. Understand it's special.
Oh, absolutely. It's something I'm sure they'll remember forever. When you take a step back and you look at it maybe 5-10 years down the line and think about it, they go, oh my goodness, I did that. That's really cool.
It is. And they're surrounded by a lot of great runners, and sometimes it does, again, say, well, this is no big deal, but it certainly is. I mean, you have a guy like Anthony Kostelec, who's, you know, ACC champion, and he's from Almore High School. You say, well, okay, maybe it isn't that big a deal. It is. Getting it right this week, Nicoline Wilder, a good buddy. She and her husband, their great daughter, Valerie, ran at Western. Nicoline has parlayed into a pretty good marathoning career herself, and she's getting into her mid-years now, I would say. You know, she's a little bit younger than I am, but really doing great. She comes in with a calf strain on Friday this past week. Have no idea where it came from, Mark. Tuesday, I was in a workout, a little tempo run. I strained my calf. I never had anything like this. I'm limping around. It's getting a little better. How do I get it better? But to me, more importantly, what caused it? Because you can get something better, but if you go back to the source again, it's going to re-injure. Did some dissecting of the previous 3 days, unraveled it to all the way. We went back first and then worked our way forward. So kind of like, you know, if you lost something and you said, okay, I need to start back from the moment I had it until now. So we started back. I usually start 3 or 4 days back. Sleep, stress, time on your feet, anything unusual.
Right.
Nothing. Then we got to Tuesday. She'd been down in Richmond, had rushed back from Richmond, got out of the car. So driven down, driven back, and you know what your right foot is doing it's in a car. It's on the gas pedal, sitting in a kind of a stationary kind of stress position.
Yep.
Gets out of the car. Calf is in this kind of tight position. Gets out of the car, doesn't really warm up to speak of, meaning, you know, loosen up.
Yep.
Jumps into her running clothes, goes out for a run because she had a commitment that evening, so she was squeezed time-wise.
Yeah.
Kind of rushes into the workout, boom. So there was the mistake. So getting it right was, first off, coming to me quickly.
Yes.
Secondly, identifying it was. And third, not being defensive about it, saying, well, what's the big deal? She goes, oh my gosh, that's it. So you might say, well, Mark, are you asking people to stop driving their cars? Are you asking people not to live their lives? No. I'm saying that when you do have challenges come at you from life, grade everything on a curve and scale back a little. So what could she have done better? Okay. Maybe shifted her foot around throughout the drive, maybe gotten out and stretch. Okay, but she didn't have time. She's rushing. All right, then get out of the car and maybe take a little more time warming up or scale back the workout.
Right.
The other thing she didn't do very much of was hydrate that day. And dehydration can lead very much to calf strain.
So I think there's a huge key in scaling back the workout. And I think sometimes people fear that in the midst of their training, if they go for a run and it's part of the regimen and their time is a little slower, they maybe freak out and internalize, oh no, I'm not doing as well as I should, and then not realize that it's the training. It's part of the process to sound like the UVA sports teams, but you have to do what's right at that moment and recognize in the moment that this is part of the training, and that's it.
As a coach, I am not someone, I disagree with other coaches that say at any given moment you should be able to perform at a certain level. I'm not looking for people to have excuses all the time. I don't like going down that road. In fact, I'm one that doesn't really like when people come to a workout and start making excuses.
Right.
But the flip side is, I do expect people, especially as they get into 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, which is the age group I work with the most, to understand that life does throw its own challenges. If you try and punch through those challenges and continue to try and exert yourself at a certain level, you'll be in trouble. And same thing goes for if it's hot the day of the 10-miler, we haven't been running in heat all winter, you need to say, okay, I'm shooting for 90 minutes. Well, today I'll be lucky, happy, content with 93 minutes rather than 90. And you just go into it with that attitude, and you might surprise yourself. Otherwise, you get really frustrated.
Yeah.
I call out to the getting it right, the RMR kids, our post-collegiate kids. These have been, actually, interesting enough, a tough gang sometimes to coach at first because they had a lot of habits they had developed in high school and college. And to be marathoners, you have to kind of strip away those old habits of going out fast, not thinking about your pacing, not hydrating, no nutritional stuff, goose gels, working with them on their breathing. All of this kind of stuff was not learned at the same level. I'm not saying the coaches were inferior. They were running 800 meters a mile in high school, 5,000 in college. Here we're 5,000 meters is 3.1 miles. A marathon is 26.2. They, I would argue, are kind of like the difference between squash and tennis. You still have a racket and a ball, but very different dynamics.
Exactly.
So Seth Hutchinson, who's our top marathoner locally, eighth at Boston last year, really getting it right more and more all the time. Understand the whole thing about not pushing. He'd had a 4x4 mile workout the other day.
Okay.
4x4 miles. It was wrapped into a 20-mile run. Imagine. Dan did it down on what we call the magic pavement, which is the paved section of the RTF down along the river at Riverview Park. It's marked every quarter mile there. We've got it all marked out. Supposed to run it at marathon pace and get quicker in between. It get quicker each 4 mile segment. And get a really quick jog in between, minute, 90 seconds, 2 minutes tops. So 4x4 miles, marathon pace or faster. Starts out right around marathon pace, works his way down his last 4 miles. He's running right around 5 minute pace, if you can imagine. And feeling good, hardly breathing, not getting cocky or arrogant, just say, I'm starting to feel fit. That's a true marathon workout. If you can do 16 miles worth of marathon pace with little jogs in between. And the way he succeeded was, again, he started out slower. His first mile was his slowest of the 16 miles. Beautiful. Same thing with his teammates, Sally Ford, Thomas Adam, Chris Post, Charlie Hurd, had a track workout last week, 600s, a set of four of them, 400s, four of them, 200s, four of them, and reminded them the very first repeat, the first 400 or 600 should be the slowest of the day. It's a throwout. It's like your bad quiz. You get 10 quizzes in a semester, you warm up, you throw that one out, and beautiful job of negative splitting it. So, and a call out to Andrew Zapanta, who ran down the Little Rock half marathon over the weekend. He's a UVA employee, a bean counter over at UVA, really good fellow, former track club president. 50-55 for his first half of the half marathon and 49-45 for his second. Beautiful negative splits. Felt great. Last 4 miles just cranking, feeling really good. And it was actually a workout and kind of embedded into his marathon training. So very good. A couple of training tips of the week. Hydro training, which we call pool training, running in the pool, running in the deep end. Mm-hmm. First off, why would someone do this? A variety of reasons. You're injured. You're very injured where you can't weight bear, so you're in there all the time. Or you're assimilating into maybe some other forms of activity, but you're definitely trying to stay away from weight-bearing activity, so you're in the pool for a good part of that. You're off an injury, but it's just still lingering in the background, and you're running 40 miles a week, and 20 of it is in the pool, or 15 is in the pool. Or you're someone who isn't injured and just wants to use your pool run as a recovery run. So you might go hard on Monday and hard on Wednesday or hard on Thursday, but on Tuesday, you jump in the pool and get in there for about an hour run around the deep end, and that's relieves your legs, lets you heal up even quicker. So I have people right now that are higher mileage people. They're doing 50, 60, 70, 80 miles a week, and they're in the pool 2 or 3 days a week, and they're not injured. They're trying to prevent themselves from getting injured, and they're trying to do that really important concept of recovering in between their quote-unquote workouts. Who's getting this right now? Kristen Keller, stress factor. She's out for the season, a stress reaction, actually. She's got a pile, a whole cache of folks keeping her company in the pool and doing it right. Flotation device, very important. A lot of people think you get in there, macho your way through the deep end without the flotation device. Getting a better workout with that actually is bad for form, can end up causing some other issues. So you actually run in the pool. You do workout of sorts, a minute hard, minute easy, 30 seconds hard, 30 seconds easy, 2 minutes hard. Hard can be different paces. Obviously, if you go 5 minutes hard, it's obviously hard for 5 minutes is different than hard for 30 seconds. Kills the time because it's excruciatingly boring unless you have folks in there. And you literally mimic the running motion, never bringing the hands above the water level and really getting your heart rate up. It's the closest thing scientists have found to simulating the act of running without the weight-bearing negative effects of you know, of running.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it really has become a mainstay in our country for all kinds of athletes. Football players who go in the pool when they're injured. Mm-hmm. Where did this all start? Thoroughbred racehorses in the 60s and 70s. They would throw them in these deep, gigantic wells, you know, with a cement pad in the middle, and it'd be like a lap around there, and the guy would harness the horse and, you know, have it run around the deep, you know, this is right. Very deep pool, obviously, 10, 12, 15 feet deep. And it would keep the horse race, the horses in good shape, cardio-wise. So in 1982, a local doctor approached Cynthia, said he had built a well. He had read all this stuff about thoroughbred racehorses training in the pool. And my wife, Cynthia, was the first human to ever do this. Very cool national coverage at the time. And now there's so many, you know, all, like I said, different kinds of human athletes that do this right. MJK this weekend. I want to talk about perception of effort. This is good for racing, period. Perception of effort is you run at your effort, not at your pace. So you keep the effort consistent throughout the race. So, Mike, when you get on the starting line, if it's a slight downhill, you may go a little faster. Anywhere throughout the course that there's a downhill, especially in the latter part, you can actually, if you had a Garmin to monitor your pace, let's say you're shooting for 8-minute pace, okay? You're shooting for 8-minute pace. On the downhills, you can run 7:20, 7:30 pace because the effort is the same as 8-minute pace. You're not working hard to run that fast. On the flats, you should feel, that's the only time your effort should equate to the pace, 8-minute pace. And here's the sticker, and this is, I say this for last because it's the most important. It's the one that gets people in trouble. The uphills. Of course, Charlottesville has lots of uphills. This MJK has uphills. 10-miler has a lot of uphills. The mistake people make is they try and maintain their pace on the uphills. This is especially true of marathoners. Big, huge trouble. You're burning your gas prematurely. You only have a certain amount of gas in the tank. So you think about if you want to drive around Charlottesville and gun all the hills in your car, you're actually, that car's straining harder, sucking more gas to get up that hill. Everybody knows that. You figure that out pretty quickly when you start paying for your own gas. So at 18, 19 years old, suddenly you're paying for gas, you're realizing, maybe if I don't go up the hill so hard, I get up a little slower, but I don't burn the humans the same way. So on the uphill, what does that 8-minute person do? 8:15, 8:20, because the effort feels like 8.
Right.
And say, well, oh my God, I'm losing time. Well, that's a sign of a new green insecure runner, because I just finished telling you on the downhills, you can, and yeah, for every race in this town, give me a break. The downhills equate to the uphills. 10-milers, there's as many downhills as there are uphills. Lean into them. Perception of effort. I call it POE. You don't practice that, you're going to get burned. Well, how are you going to get burned? You're going to burn the gas prematurely and tank out the last mile.
That was 100% my problem last year with the MJAK, and I did that. And I almost thought of it like the Seabiscuit effect. I thought of this. When I see other people on the hill going a little slower, my initial reaction was, this is like this mental game took over my head to speed up. And then I get to the top of the hill, they'd whiz right on by me because I burned out. I totally did that.
They were playing with you, not saying, Mikey B, and it's a sportscaster, and I, you know, that's, you know, Northeastern boy, let's crush him. You know, that,
sure.
With me, it's always the running shop owner. Let's go after that guy, the coach. Boy, you know, it's a trophy case. And I always remind him, it's not much of a trophy these days, guys, to take me out. But anyway, huge amount of patience. And let your breathing be your Jiminy Cricket. It's your guide. It's your conscience. Oh, boy, that's not good.
Yep.
Not even in now, you can breathe like that the last half mile as you're trying to really smoke it in.
Yep.
But doggone it, not two miles into a five-mile race. Now, different story, Shamrock. People are running Shamrock next weekend. It's a flat marathon course, a flat 8K course down at Virginia Beach. Big, huge, one of our biggest marathons in the state. There, you really, really have to concentrate, focusing on staying slower the first part, and then pacing yourself throughout the marathon at the marathon pace, being careful that you're not going below marathon pace on the flats. Because again, that effort is if you're shooting for 8 minutes in the marathon and you're running 7:40s, it may not feel like very much, but you're burning that gas because on flat, that is a greater effort on your body than 8 minutes. So flat running, very challenging, surprisingly. It tends to be a little more mental because it's boring. There aren't as many turns as hills. It's not as much stimulation. Many folks over the years have claimed that even though Charlottesville 10-miler is hillier, it's actually easier to race than Cherry Blossom up in D.C., which runs around the Tidal Basin. It's as flat as one of those NASCAR speedways. It's really, really flat. And without that stimulation of hills to kind of keep you in your game, that much more meant it's like a track race.
Right.
Imagine 10 miles or worse yet, a marathon on a track. So, and then you got wind issues at the beach. So my recommendation to Shamrock folks is, sorry, big guys, but smaller folks, people my size, tuck in behind some a crowd or some bigger people, and it's all fair. You're drafting, so to speak. And now, obviously, you don't want to do that the whole way.
Yeah.
But you use the people around you as a shield. I mean, it's the way it goes. So, because and with the windy scenario, that can be trouble. But really, with Shamrock, it's a little late now. But I would get down on that magic pavement I just talked about and do almost all your runs if you can down there because it's flat and it'll get your body used to that. A couple of studies this week, Mike, that I found really interesting in my favorite magazine, The Week. So it's in the March 4th issue, and health scare of the week, strokes in young people. Strokes are usually seen as a threat to the elderly, but new research suggests that the risk is spreading to people decades younger. No surprise here when you hear why. A recent study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found that since 1994, stroke hospitalizations have actually declined among seniors while rising dramatically for those not yet 45. Men from 15 to 34 showed that the most dramatic increase in stroke risk, a hike of 51%, while women's odds went up the most in the 35 to 44, an alarming 36%. It definitely is alarming, says American Heart Association President, blah, blah, blah. Experts point to the growing incidence of obesity, high blood pressure, and diabetes among younger Americans as likely cause. Those same risk factors could cause a wave of cardiovascular disease in 10 to 15, 20 years. It's alarming. People making, again, this show is all about making good choices with your body, eating right, sleep, hydration, and most importantly, exercise. And you can see this is an amazing thing. Then just in 1994, not that long ago, that the change is that much.
Wow.
And then a fiber can prolong your life study here. This is, again, no surprise, but again, alarming how little fiber most Americans get in their diet. Most of us are not getting near enough fiber, and the difference could mean life or death. A new study by the NIH, 400,000 men and women, pretty extensive study, have found that those who ate high-fiber diets were 22% less likely to die, that's pretty dramatic, over a 9-year period than those on low-fiber end of the spectrum, which is the majority of Americans that are on the low end. On average, we consume only about 15 grams of fiber per day, roughly the amount in 5 pieces of whole wheat bread, but health experts say women should get 25 grams and men 38, while doctors have long touted roughage's beneficial effect on heart health. The study showed that fiber may also significantly reduce your odds of succumbing to respiratory and infectious diseases and preventing cancer. It goes on and on, talks about the benefits of fiber. So, you know, again, you put oil in the car, you want that car to last a long time, you get shingles on your roof, paint your house, you want the house to last a long time, you save your kids' college fund, you're prudent about it. But the thing staring us in the face is, you know, what are we going to be like in retirement years? How healthy do we want to be? And how long do we want to live? So a little bit of scare stuff there, certainly.
Well, I think the nutrition aspects and just with exercise in general are just really fascinating as well. Like I had a lot of fiber last week, and I'll tell you, it was good news.
It's fiber and you know, and water.
I don't have enough of it myself, though, and I know that. But I did.
I'm lacking in it also. So it's something I have to work at, that and my hydration. Volunteers of the week, and call out to the Rogel family. They've been at it for over 30 years, helping the running community. Joanne and Al and their daughter, Babette, and son Ian have given and given and given to so many athletic events over the years. Al is a physician over at the university. He turned 70 today, so a call out to him. He's 70 years old. His son's an athletic trainer at Mary. He's the head athletic trainer at Mary Washington. Used to be the athletic trainer at Louise in Charlottesville. Ian and Joanne is helping me at the finish line of the MJK this week. We call the octopus lady because she's the one that handles those tear-offs. As you come down the chute, you often wonder, well, how do those tear-offs get onto a spindle without backing up the chutes? It's her at the big races. And she puts them onto a spindle in order so that those can then get inputted into a computer. So a call out to a really special family that's given a lot to the running community. Coach of the week, I give a couple of call outs here to Gary Kessler and Steve Guymon. A little bit outside of although with a podcast, there is no listening area, so to speak, which is kind of cool.
Right.
But outside of Central Virginia, a little bit, Wilson Memorial, a smaller high school over on the other side of the mountain, just on the other side of the mountain. We've had a great relationship with this high school all the years we've been open. In fact, about 85 of them are coming over to visit us at the store this week. And Steve and Gary have done a wonderful job with their coaching over the years. They're great recruiters and great retainers, meaning they get these kids. I always argued any given high school in this country, any given time, they're state champions in running, wandering the halls. The question is, can you recruit them?
Yep.
Motivate them to want to do something as boring sounding as running. Remember in high school, I mean, running? Weeks. Get them out there and then retain them. Meaning have fun with them, help them improve, stimulate them. That means kids don't quit after one season. They've got a sophomore, Hannah Rose, who set the school record 2 weeks ago in the mile and the 2 mile, 5:41:11:56. So one of their many success stories. Hats off to these guys for giving their time. Whenever they come over, Mike, you can see how much these kids like him. In fact, Steve Guyman, they call him Guyman. They don't call him coach. And there's this joking report, respect,
right,
but teasing him, funny stuff. And I think, you know, if I had a coach like that in high school, I wasn't real high on my coach back in New Jersey. He was a bit of a sourpuss and had his favorites, and I wasn't one of them. And, you know, it was a different experience. And I'm always envious when I see this kind of experience. And we're blessed here locally with all the cool coaches and fun coaches and, you know, the nicknames for the kids and surprise stuff and, you know, stern in they're trying to get them better, but also had that nice balance. The Winston Browns and the Lindy Baines and the Buzz Males that we've talked about so often. A little bit in the news, Abode, which is Seaville's house issue. It comes out as their special supplement. It usually comes out about every 2 or 3 months. On the cover this week, Mark Hampton and Jay Alexander, two of my favorite guys, and also Hampton's one of my prized Boston marathoners. And you talk about a guy who gets it right. Little calf strain this weekend from running up on the park. And not calf strain. He had a iliotibial band, which is that pain on the outside of the knee. Caught it on Saturday. Came in Saturday afternoon to talk to me about it. And we came up with all kinds of therapy for it, what to do, including running in the pool.
Right.
And saw him this morning. Goes, he ran 7 miles this morning. He goes, Mark, feel great. But he skipped the workout today. Very important because we still want to make sure he gets out of the wilderness. His buddy Jay, also a shorter distance runner, and a very cool partnership between these two guys, and that running is a big part of their life. And anyway, their house, it's down in Belmont, very cool house, is featured on the cover of Abode, so kind of neat thing. Glenn Anderson, do you remember that name, Mike? Who's Glenn Anderson? He's our 50-stater.
That's right.
He clicked off his 35th over the weekend. He was down there with Andrew Zapanta. Andrew ran the half, remember we just talked about, and Glenn ran the Little Rock Marathon. And ran 3:46, amazing.
That's
great.
It
was like 8:30 pace or whatever, somewhere in there. And maybe it's 8:20, somewhere in that neighborhood. But anyway, regardless, it's pretty doggone fast.
Absolutely.
For somebody. He's got 5 marathons in, I think, 9 weeks. And so by the time he's done with it, it'll be 39. He'll only, I think, have 11 to go. So he plans on knocking those out in 2012.
What a cool way to see the country, too.
Way to see the country. And he's embraced it. He's met people along the way, the different cultures within our society. You know, we think of U.S. as kind of this, you know, similar country all the way around, but you go Arkansas, very different than his trip to Wyoming, very different than his trip to Alaska, his trip to New York.
Right.
Very cool. Local running history trivia. The answer last week to the trivia question, who was UVA's first female to accept an athletic scholarship? Not a running scholarship, athletic. It happened to be a runner. Margaret Gross. Answered correctly by Ryan Looney. She's one of my athletes. Good for her. That's a significant one. And I'm telling you, my daughter Annie was doing a piece on paper.
Right.
She's been working on it for the last 4 weeks on Title IX. I said, Margaret Gross was present at creation. She was, you know, historic and still holds the school record in several events. And she won the 1988 Olympic trials in the marathon. She was our top marathoner going into the Seoul Olympics in 88. Okay, so we talked about Doug Bloor earlier today. He's our trivia question, historical trivia question. What high school did he compete for when he was in high school, when he grew up in our area? And he was the last local runner to do what on the old Piedmont course? Piedmont, where the community college is, that's where all of the high school and collegiate meets were held, including the state championship for the Virginia High School League. Triple A, single A, double A, they were all there. What did Doug do? He was the last local runner to do something significant on that course. Very significant. And it's something good. It's not trivial in the sense that, you know, he fell and, you know, broke a leg or something like that. And then what school did he compete for? In the starting blocks this week, of course, we talked about NCAAs. They're down at College Station this weekend. You go to UVA's website to get results on that. Their athletic website, very good. The high school national is milestat.com. You can get results there. That's in the Bronx. MJK, you can still sign up for that. Alec and Audrey, my son and daughter, helping Lori Wilson down there direct that event. You can sign up even the night before at the community building, which is right next to the hospital, the current hospital location. Next week, next Thursday, we're hosting, we do every year, an author for the Virginia Festival of the Book. And we've got Kate Buford coming in, not a big household name, but she's with a significant publishing house, has published a bestseller on Jim Thorpe, voted the greatest athlete of the first half of the 20th century. For Mike, your age group, and younger, maybe not a significant name, but he was the guy, Indian, Native American Indian, who Carlisle, Pennsylvania, was incredible in football, incredible in track, incredible in baseball, incredible in everything. Really, truly, one of these God-gifted, great athletes, went to the Olympics, had his medals taken away ultimately because he participated in semi-professional, you know, AAA a baseball league for, I can't remember what team it was. But anyway, very cool story. That's next Thursday, 7 o'clock, free, if you want to learn more about this fascinating guy. And really, Pop Warner and all the start of the really college athletics, particularly college football, Jim Thorpe was competing from around the turn of the century up to about 1915, 1920. That's when everything, all the football rules would be. I've been reading the book at night. It's fascinating. Mm. Stuff that we take for granted today was, they were tweaking the game. That's what I'm getting more out of than learning about Jim Thorpe. Huh. March 20th, a significant date. Put it in anybody's interest in track. It's the last time that we will run a meet at Lanigan Field before they bulldoze it up and build a beautiful new facility. So that's an all-comers meet. Huh. The RMR team and the UVA Intramural Department through the AFC, they're hosting it. It's open to the public. They're opening this up to the public. Masters included, 40 and over. 100, 200 meters, 400 meters, 800, the mile, and the 2 mile, and a 4x4. Free right now if you enter online. Day of, $5 for the meet. 3 o'clock, Sunday afternoon, 20th. Do not miss if you want to see. A lot of times people say, I have no idea what I can run a mile at this point in my life. Here's a chance. And then March 19th, the day before, is the Camp Holiday Trails, the medical school. UVA Medical School hosts this every year. Wonderful event. That's a 5K event the day before. Runners of the week. Quieter week, but a lot of noise made by the girls DMR at UVA. So that's Gay, Smith, Harper, and Garcia. Go get them this weekend, ladies, because you're competing at nationals. Let's see if you can take Villanova down and any other school that might be making some noise. Be careful, folks, in closing here, as you're getting ready for the 10-miler. This is 2 weeks out this weekend. You should begin your taper next week. And the weekend before, critical that you don't go too long. Nothing more than 7 or 8 miles on that Saturday before the 10-miler. If you're waiting for that time to do your first 10-miler or your last 10-miler, that's a little edgy. That's a little far to go. You're supposed to be a day per mile recovery, Mike. So okay. You're supposed to, if you're 7 days out, you want to be a 7 or 8 mile run. If you're
right.
5 days out, 5 mile run, 2 days out, 2 mile run. That really is the way to do it. So, all right. And keep enjoying it, and we'll talk to you next week. Stay on your feet.
This week's edition of RunCast was brought to you by the Ragged Mountain Running Shop, Central Virginia's community running and walking family partner since 1982. Conveniently located on the historic UVA corner with free parking at their doorstop. Visit them online at raggedmountainrunning.com or make sure you friend them on Facebook, Ragged Mountain Running Shop.